Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Suave.
I've been in my bag for a while, I'm invincible. Story of a young boss grinding, shit get critical. Calling on my bros one time, cause you special. I had some hood dreams and right rounds for my mentor. Every target that I shoot is on point like a pencil. Different route, changed relationships, I'm so sorry. Came up from the trenches and I made it, I say hardly. Now
Bet Online is your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup Finals this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker or unwind with one of our over 150 slot games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online. The game starts here.
All righty, guys. We are pleased to be joined by a special guest on the What's In Your Bag podcast. But you guys already know the drill, man. Before we introduce our guest, man, we got to get into the nitty gritty. As always, I'm your host, Andrew Robinson. And that was my guy, Pull Up Tay, on the intro. This is going to be him as well on the outro. One of the hottest up-and-comer artists out of DMV, man. Make sure you guys are streaming his music, running it up, showing him some love, man. But like I mentioned, man, we have a special guest on the show today. This is somebody who I've been trying to get on the show for a little while, man, but somebody who's very, very busy, somebody who we insisted upon making this happen, man, because he's a very important person who's very well-versed in the industry, has handled a bunch of different baskets, man, somebody who I'm excited to just learn from, hear from, and just share his story with you guys as well. We're pleased to be joined by Trevon Edwards, who is the celebrity and influencer relations coordinator at Wieden & Kennedy, also known as Trey, man. So, Trey, man, thank you for joining us today, my guy.
Man, appreciate you, man. You put way too many specials in between that, man. I'll take one special, man, and happy birthday to you and your brother.
I appreciate it, man. Shoot, 28. It's crazy, man. I was just thinking about it, man, that Drake song, man. 28 at midnight, wonder what's left for me. Oh, man.
28's a good year, man. 28's a good year.
Good year. It's a good year, bro, but it's crazy because one of my homies wrote this on Twitter, man. He was like, yo, when you're 27, enjoy it. Because as soon as you hit 28, everybody going to remind you that you're pushing 30. And you're 30 right around the corner. And I'm just like, already the guy. Like, yo, bro, happy birthday, bro. You're getting old, man. You're almost 30. I'm like, damn, I can't even.
Yeah, they're rushing you. They're rushing you, man. But, you know, again, it does go by fast. But just make it count. Make it count for sure. I ain't even getting to my career until I was 29. So like my 20s, I was just kind of just hanging out, playing ball, doing what I wanted to do. I just didn't really take it serious. And I relied on my 30s to, you know, kind of grow up a little bit, make some more important decisions. And as I'm approaching the end of my 30s and going into that next level, you know, I'm just, you know, looking back at the years that I've been able to, you know, live and learn from those things and not carry it over. So, you know, it's been a true blessing.
100%, man. I feel like that's super, number one, it's super, I feel like, inspiring and encouraging. Cause I know a lot of people who, we've had this conversation with a bunch of different people on the podcast. It's about like the idea of, you know, rushing yourself, man. Like, I feel like you put so much pressure on yourself, even like as like 20 something, you're like, man, like, all right, I gotta have my career established. I gotta have my first house. I have a partner by now. I should be whatever. And like everybody's put all this pressure on themselves to just perform and elevate in life, man. And it's like to hear that you've been able to get to the places you've been able to get to in your life. And you're like, I didn't even jump into my career until I was 29. You know what I mean? I think it gives a lot of people hope and encouragement that like, you know, your timeline is your timeline. At the end of the day, you can't rush success and you'll fall into the right opportunities at the right time. You know what I mean? And I think that's such a valuable lesson in today's society, man, that's around mental health and, you know, everybody that I feel like just has this social media where you're just comparing yourself to everybody all the time. You know what I mean? So I know for me, it's definitely super refreshing to hear, man. I know for our audience as well.
Yeah, man. You know, June is, you know, men's mental health month. You know what I mean? Super important. Definitely, you know, also therapy. You know, that's really expensive, man. Everybody can't, afford it. You know what I mean? It's definitely a bill. I wish it was free for everybody, you know what I'm saying? But Just hopefully those people that are dealing with those silent battles are comfortable enough or find those people to let, you know, get out, be able to vent and talk about the things that are bothering them. And, you know what I mean? Lean towards more vulnerability versus, you know, people telling them to man up or boys don't cry or however it is, you know what I mean? Because the weight of the world is real heavy, you know what I'm saying? Especially when you realize that it's just you. You know what I'm saying? It's just you. You know what I mean? You got a twin brother and it's still just you because at the end of the
Facts.
day, like, you got to make your own decisions. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you was to have a family right now, like, everybody dependent on you. You
Straight
know what I'm
up.
saying? So, you know, you don't have to carry it all, but just also understand that, you know, when things get heavy, let it out. Don't let it, you know, get the best of you.
Yeah, 100%, man. This is definitely a super refreshing conversation, man. We're definitely gonna circle back to this. Definitely later on in the podcast, but I kind of wanted to get some insight into your personal journey, man, because like I mentioned in the introduction, you got your hand in a bunch of different hats, obviously at Wieden & Kennedy, in the marketing landscape, but you have a plethora of experience in the media, podcasting, just everything around social media, branding and stuff like that. So I want to talk to you about how you kind of got into that, right? You just mentioned you didn't kind of really get into your career till you were 29. So like, where did that come from as far as like the podcasting, the media knowledge, like how did you kind of land into that career field? You know what I mean? Talk to me about them early days and kind of figuring all that stuff out.
Yeah, so for podcasting, man, honestly, I didn't even know what a pod I can't say I didn't know what a podcast was because I had a teammate that was listening to Joe Rogan. He listened to him faithfully, but I really wasn't like tripping. And then I kind of was on the internet a lot, so I got a chance to hear Combat Jack, but I wasn't like consistent. And I had a buddy, you know, he's actually my business partner now, but I mean, El Hassan, you know, he was at ESPN. Well, he was with the Phoenix Suns at the time. Then he went over to ESPN. And early on, this was when Derrick Rose was on the Knicks. I had a friend that played for the Knicks, and I was around that team. And I got invited to come on to ESPN and talk about it. And, you know, I didn't know that it was a podcast. I didn't know what platform I was going to be on. I just was like, all right, yeah, I'm going to talk about it. And I was, you know, like, I know better to like tell some stuff that ain't supposed to be told. So I danced around a little bit, but you know, the listeners really rocked with it. And, you know, they found my Twitter and they kind of followed. And I was invited back a few weeks after. And it just got fun, man. It was kind of like, you know, I was an elementary school teacher for about 6 years. So during this time, I was like trying to find my locker room, trying to find my community to talk sports, to talk things, just to like fellas. Cause like my friend, like friend group in Phoenix was not like strong. I was strictly just work and home. So being able to go do this and, you know, I didn't take it serious because I was still teaching. I was sneaking out of my prep period to record episodes and then going back and teaching. You know what I mean? Doing it for free. And as my popularity grown, you know, I left teaching to become a full-time podcaster for a year. It was definitely a learning experience. Someone had recruited us, joined a independent podcast company that went under in less than 6 months. So I had to go back. I lost everything. I had to go back to teaching. And that was not a great feeling. It was a lot of humility in that situation. But like a good experience early in the game of learning the business and however that went. And then after that, we were able to create Count the Dings, which is the podcast network that myself and five others, you know, co-founded. So we have, you know, put out thousands of episodes since then. So it's been a blessing to still be around and have people still want to listen to you, because we are nothing without the fans. And you know, I still bug out that people even stop and you know want to have a conversation with me or say that they've been listening to me for this long or they remember with me on certain stuff. And you know, I've transitioned my career into so many different spaces and touched so many different spaces that you would just think that people would just get exhausted after a while.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. Now, I feel like I want to pause a little bit because I want to ask you a question for the people who might be listening to this, right? And they might be like, wait, hold on. Full-time podcaster. How does that work, right? Because I don't think, and I think obviously this industry has grown tremendously since when it first started, right? But I don't think a lot of people understand that, like, nowadays especially, there's, and maybe it wasn't back then, but today speaking, there's a lot of money in podcasting. Like, a bunch of ads are pouring into these podcasts to get, you know, ad revenue and time slots, and there are distribution deals where, you know, media and production companies are producing podcasts. To where you could actually be, like you mentioned, a full-time podcaster and earn money. Now, obviously, you mentioned that the company that you first started under went under. But talk to me about what that looks like, right? As far as people who might hear that and be like, wait, full-time podcaster, you could make that a full-time job? Like, how does that actually work?
Yeah, man, honestly, this was early, man. This was 2017, you know? Yeah. Like, this was 7 years ago. I was a full-time podcaster, you know what I mean? Like, doing live shows, you know, yeah, going to record. I'll probably do like a pod or two that day. And I'm like scheduled to do maybe 3-4 pods a week for like 2 hours. And that was my day. Like, I had nothing to kick it. I'm just back home in LA, just chilling. Go to the office and record, you know, and knock it out. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was smooth, man. It was real smooth. But like, again, our spending habits was really ridiculous. You know what I mean? The things that we was trying to do, like the money was flowing, but like, we thought it was all handled because we thought it had like ads and things of that nature. And it just wasn't that case, but definitely a learning lesson. But it also gave me a taste of what it's like, you know what I mean, to solely be relied on as, you know, podcasting as a profession.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Count the Dings. Obviously, you co-founded that with 5 other individuals, and that kind of blew up to where, like, you guys were really able to make a name for yourselves and things like that. Talk to me about building that up, what that process was like, trying to make that into something, and what it eventually became. And, you know, I feel like, well, I'll ask that first, because I have a follow-up as well, because I feel like the ins and outs of that is very intricate, man, something that I'm interested in hearing about. But just talk to me about the idea about getting that started and what that process was like, trying to get that off the ground.
Yeah, after that podcast business went under, I think that kind of shifted us to like get into the mode of, hey, we still want to do this. Yeah. We enjoyed working together. Our collective had started with ESPN's True Hoop. Shouts to Henry Abbott and Jade Hoy, super producer, who's also a co-founder of Count the Dings. You know, their genius was more so just like taking non-traditional podcasters and just making them into stars. You feel me? Like, just going into that. I remember we had Bum, which is one of the shows under Count the Dings, but it was under ESPN at one point in time. It was the Monday section of this five-day lineup of podcasts. And it was for the Black listener to understand, to talk about culture, to talk about sports from a Black point of view. And it was hosted by Amin and produced by Jade. And originally we had Chris Childs come on and explain the fight between him and Kobe. We had myself and Steven Jackson. We had the Kid Mero. And the list went on. And we would just talk about certain things, just the perspective of like dealing with racism in sports and just hitting on the hard-hitting you know, conversations, Kaepernick kneeling. So it wasn't solely just basketball. It was just a good thing. And over time, I think like 4 months, ESPN took it off, and fans end up writing letters to ESPN like, yo, we need to get it back on. And they put it back on. But after I think like a month or so, right before when they got Woj hired, they end up laying off some of my guys. Now, I wasn't a full-time employee. I was just a contributor. And when certain individuals got laid off that were a part of our collective, it just wasn't the same, and the energy wasn't there. We just like, nah, if we're gonna do it, we got to do it together. So some of the homies left ESPN, and we took a leap of faith and we joined that podcast network. And obviously it went under, and that was very disheartening because we solely was trying to build something up. And then as that failed, you know, we failed quietly too. We didn't tell anybody. We were dealing with that very silent. And then we, as we were getting the support, we were letting our listeners know that we were pivoting to potentially starting our own thing. And that first year, we didn't touch any of the revenue. You know, we were able to do really well for ourselves, backed by the supporters, you know, starting Patreon. You know what I mean? This is the Counting Dings has been around March 11th, 2017. You know what I'm saying? So it's been around since then, and man, it's been love, man. Patreon's been supporting, they still locked in. You know, we do a damn good for ourselves. You know what I mean? For our little podcast, our little independent company, every dime counts. And we've been able, we were actually probably, we like to credit ourselves as the live kings, the live show kings. We were first pods to really hit the road and do, you know, podcast shows before everybody kind of was taking advantage of that. You know what I mean? And then obviously we went to a full halt in 2020 during pandemic, you know, but we were known to pack out comedy shows, 400, 500 people, and sell them out and have VIP meet and greets and have a whole experience when you came. You know what I mean? The day before, we would plan out things with our listeners where we got, like, you got to know us. We even had a community created a Reddit. That's how big we got. You know what I'm saying? So definitely grateful for the fans.
So my question as a podcaster myself is, what were you guys doing to grow that audience, right? From the grassroots level, right? You're starting at nothing. You guys already had the audience and the tech guys are working at ESPN. So I think that also comes with an audience and a platform and things like that. But to turn that into dollars, like, what does that look like as far as trying to get people to pay their money to subscribe to you on Patreon or trying to bring in ad revenue, right? Like, as somebody who was doing the boots on the ground work, trying to extend those hands, right, to, you know, get that going, what did that process look like? Because I think a lot of times, again, like I mentioned before, people don't understand that, like, no, if you do it right and if you have a good podcast, you can actually make a lot of money doing it. You know what I mean? So what did that process for you look like trying to monetize that?
I think it's more so building a community. And one of the platforms that was super helpful for us was Twitter, because it gave us immediate feedback. Someone can listen to it. Episode go live at 6 a.m. Eastern, right? No, like, you know what I mean? Like 9 Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific. Someone can listen to that whole pod and be tweeting about it already. You know what I mean? And the next person that probably heard it, and the next person, like, what are they talking about? Or, you know, like trying to get, and then us as contributors chiming in and engaging and letting people see that they're heard and they're seen and that, you know what I mean? Like, and we had like a mailbag episode on Fridays where we would let people call in. And then we also kind of created the place where, you know, fans became contributors. You know what I mean? They became podcasters. Like, it was kind of a farm system of, like, come to Count the Dings where you potentially could be a podcaster too. You know what I mean? Like, if your personality was strong and you were comfortable enough to do it, because it's easier said than done. We can do this all day and just talk, but, like, imagine trying to do a live show. Imagine trying to, you know, go and interact with the people that listen to you every day or going to meet complete stranger out in the day. Like, you know, you can't see your listeners. So being personable and just being likable and not being like a jerk or, you know, all that thing, I haven't changed. You know what I mean? Like, no matter what it is. And I've also leaned into a character. You know what I mean? Like, Black Trey is my nickname, but Black Trey is also a character in the show of certain shows that I've been on. I'm Trevon Edwards. So there's a separation between the two. You know what I mean? Like, I don't bring that out as this thing. You know what I mean? Like, I let it be the butt of the joke. I'm okay with it. I'm vulnerable with the fan of, like, they know my whole life. They know how I've struggled. They know every little thing that has changed. Me tearing my meniscus and turning it into a story. My mother being shot, me losing my job, all kind of things. Me moving to New York. They've grown with me, so they believe in my journey. They're invested. They continue to be invested. I don't have almost 30,000 followers on Twitter just because of, you know, I'm doing something messy or I'm trying to be famous or something. Like, people have been invested in me and my journey, and they continue to be invested in my journey. So I think that was the main thing.
Yeah. I think that the thing that I took away from what you just said and getting people to know your story and things that your family went through and your mom and losing your job and telling your instincts, right? It just brings me back to the idea of storytelling. And I feel like the people who are the most successful, whether you're a creator, whether you're at Wieden & Kennedy and you're putting together a campaign for Nike, right? It's storytelling. You know what I mean? And how do you feel like you as a creative became good at storytelling? Because I feel like I mean, maybe sometimes it can be natural, but I think it also sometimes takes practice and reps and just, like you mentioned, kind of figuring out, all right, what is my character? What is my niche? What am I good at? And things like that. So what do you feel like that process was like for you in developing that character of Black Trey and like becoming good at storytelling to where people are invested in your journey and I want to hear from you, right?
I think storytelling just became easy because it's just like explaining what happened when your friend missed a day of school or what happened when somebody's not, you know what I mean? Like you get that practice right then and there from ground zero. You know what I'm saying? And people either gonna listen to you or they're gonna walk away. And it got to a point where people will be like, yo, you're painting this picture so well that I feel like I'm there or I'm that invested or I'm hanging on to every word that you say, right? And whether you believed it or not, I painted the picture well enough for you to be like, damn, I could see it. I believe it. You know what I mean? Like I've told so many stories. So when it got to the podcast standpoint of me telling it, I'm like, hand gestures and et cetera. And I can kind of like, yo, I was like this and did it that. And you're like, as a listener, you're just kind of like, and then what? It's like an audiobook. You know what I'm saying? So like being good at that. And then the live show just amplifies it because it's like, I've been listening to you, but now I've romanticized what you actually look like. Who are you? What type of person are you? You know what I mean? Because I didn't think you looked like that. You either gonna be disappointed or you're gonna be excited, like, oh man. And you get to like explain, yo, you know what? That was my favorite episode when you told that. And yeah, man, don't let them talk to you like that. Cause we would have rivalries and we would do all these things. I'm from the West. Other guys are from the East. So you build up these certain things and like stick it to them or a good debate. That's not disrespectful, but funny. And that's always the thing. Like the key is humor, right? Everybody, like the key to everything is laughter, bruh. Like you don't even gotta like each other, but if y'all can laugh at a joke, like that's such a feeling. You know what I'm saying? And to be able to instill that in so many people, like it is no better feeling. You know what I mean? But like, yeah, I've been blessed enough to have a voice that people listen to, that respect it. And hang on to my word. So when I talk in rooms, people listen and I get that attention. I have every eye. And it's not a demand and it's not like, yo, you better listen to me. It's just like, hey, you know what I mean? Trey's talking or he might be saying something. It is what it is. I don't talk much if I don't know you. I don't talk much for no reason. I'm only talking on things that I actually know. So I'm very mindful with my voice and my thoughts and and the things I share with. So I try to be mindful of that.
So this just came up in my mind, man, just now. And I'm like, I gotta ask your opinion on this because as two Black brothers on the show together, man, I gotta ask you. I feel like when you were talking about like explaining what happened when your boy missed the school bus, whatever. I feel like Black people, when you grow up, man, we have an innate ability to tell stories. Just like, man, you don't believe what happened to me today. Or like when your mom come home, told her, girl, let me tell you. Like Black people, we have an innate ability to tell stories, man. These be like, word.
Natural storytellers.
Yeah, like, do you find that plays a role in it?
I mean, sure. I mean, it's a part of your character. I mean, shit, white people can tell stories too. I mean, it's just the culture of wherever you belong and how the nuance of it. Because same way you listen to comedians tell jokes, it's a certain way of the delivery. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that we're all showmen as humans. You know what I'm saying? Just depends on how you display it and how it's received. Because somebody, you might be like, oh, I don't really like that voice. Like, like you pick and choose what you want to gravitate and what's for you. You know what I'm saying? But then there might be another thing. But like, yeah, like it's natural. It comes out natural. But everybody isn't great at public speaking either. So you can't just be like, Ah, you got it, bro. Like, nah, you know what I'm saying? Like, you gotta play into it to a point of confidence too. Like, I feel like if you're not a good speaker or this and that, think about how basketball is therapeutic. You know what I'm saying? You might have a bad day, but you go in the gym and you shoot, you shoot, and you shoot, and you feel much better, and then you got to get back into the real world. Same thing with podcasting. Podcasting should be therapy. You should be able to just talk about whatever it is and that shit off your chest. You know what I'm saying? And you never know who going through it with you, because the listeners is right there. Everybody got some type of relatability. That's why they listen to the content, because they relate to the content. So
Right.
like, the more honest you are, the more relatability. Like, nobody can flip it on you. You
Right.
know what I'm saying? Like that, I always like that part. Like, yeah, I never said that. I mean, I said this. So if you're trying to diss, fine. I've laid it all out there. There's no secrets. You can Google it. You know what I'm saying? It's different.
Yeah. Now I want to get your opinion on this, because this is something that I feel like obviously podcasts have like boomed since you started in 2017, right? And I think that's a good thing and a bad thing sometimes, because I think it's a good thing that more opportunities for people to make money, more streams of income, more advertisers and businesses are realizing that there are a lot of people who are investing in podcasts, and we can reach a different audience by tuning into podcasts and pouring money into it, which obviously creates more revenue for creators and stuff like that. But I also feel like the downside of it is that everybody feels like they can have an opinion. And sometimes people get on these podcasts and say the most off-the-wall shenanigans. And because they have a podcast, people might take it as law or whatever the case may be. People get on Instagram. I see these little Instagram social media podcasts all the time. People giving relationship advice. It's like, dog, how are you giving relationship advice? You single yourself, or you this and that. Like, you just, they be saying the most wild stuff nowadays. So where are you at right now on, I guess, the state of podcasting? Some people will say, oh, podcasting is oversaturated. Like, it's too many people to have a podcast for me to get into it today, right? Like, everybody's saying something. You know what I mean? Like, what do you, how do you feel about being somebody who's been in it for, what, 7 years now, right? Like, or maybe longer. Like, how do you feel about the state of podcasting today? And do you feel like the market is oversaturated? Do you feel like it's something that's gonna kind of die down here soon? Or do you think it's something that's gonna continue to grow and scale?
I don't think it's oversaturated, because everybody has so many different opinions and different approaches towards different topics that exist. You know what I mean? It could be the same topic but delivered differently. And I'm not the person to discourage people who want to pursue this. You
Right.
know what I mean? Some people are going to be successful, some people aren't. It is a job for real, no
Yeah.
matter how you look at it. You know what I mean? And I think if you go on intentions trying to make money, you're probably not going to make money, because you're going to hate it if it doesn't happen fast enough for you. You know what I mean? Everybody's not going to have a celebrity guest. Everybody's not going to get an endorsement. And then be mindful that the internet is forever. So the things that you're actually putting out there may affect you later on down the line. You know what I mean? Just like how a social media post would be. So be mindful of your content. Like, I'm big on characterization and integrity. So like, I'm not going to just crash out. And some people crash out just for clicks and all these things. And that's them. That's the life they chose. So like, I mean, I do see it for what it is. I don't see podcasting going anywhere anytime soon. I feel like the market is growing, because ads are ads, bruh. People gotta get their businesses out, and they have to use the airwaves. I think the beauty of podcasting is like on-demand radio. You get to pick and choose when you want to listen to it, commercial free sometimes, and
Yeah.
who you want to listen to, and your specific person. That's all it is. It has created a direct channel of your favorite disc jockey. You know what I'm saying? Or a radio host. You know what I'm saying? That's the only thing that I think is the beauty of it. But like, when people, I literally put out a book for podcasters. You know what I'm saying? I put out a book for social media too. My thing was that go ahead and do it. I'm not here to do it. People come to me all the time with advice, and you know, they don't thank me. They don't do all that other stuff. But also, I don't see them as a threat. I'm not about to gatekeep podcasting just to like keep it for myself.
Yeah.
I always tell people, like, I'll see you at the top, or maybe I'll be on your show. I don't know. But at the end of the day, like, I'm not about to tell you, like, to discourage you and shut down your dreams. Like, if your dream is to be a podcast, then go for it. I'm all for it. And I will listen to it. If you send me an episode, you send me an episode. I checked it out. I gave some feedback. At the end of the day, like, I could have been like, man, hey, bro, this ain't for you. You know what? You need to quit because I see you as competition. Like, what kind of? Nah. Like, bro, it's way too much money out here, and there's way too many different audiences that like certain, just listen to certain things. So I'm all about encouraging it, man. I can't do this forever, but I enjoy doing it right now.
That's great. Last thing I kind of want to ask you about before I get into the, the whole marketing aspect of things is you obviously were talking about building a huge platform on Twitter, and you were able to build the NBA Bubble Life page, and that kind of also contributed to a lot of this whole brand, on social media. So I kind of want to talk about building that up, where that came from, and how what it was like when that page started to kind of take a life of its own.
Yeah, man, I've been on Twitter since 09. My friend William H, my man William H talked me into getting off MySpace to go on it. He's like, yo, we on the Sidekicks. We had like a T-Mail group chat. And he was like, yo, Twitter lit. Twitter lit, boy. He's from Connecticut. He's like, Twitter lit, boy. You got to be on. Like, celebrities on there. I remember the first celebrity I followed was Shaq. And Shaq had it. And Shaq was promoting it. I don't know how much he got paid for it, but he was promoting it. And he was like, yeah, I'm on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter. So everybody was following. So Shaq had all the following. But he was tweeting people back. And your early tweets was like, chilling. Going to get a burger. Something like that. You know what I'm saying? But at the time, man, one of my friends was in the NBA. He was a rookie. So I lived with him for a little bit. And we was on Ustream and we was on Twitter. And people used to be like, he'd be like, go follow Black Trey. So I had like 2,000, 3,000 followers off rip. You know what I mean? Not even understanding, like, my influence. I'm like, yo, I remember we found a the Weeknd. We were the first people to put the Weeknd out there on
Gee.
Twitter. You know what I'm saying? But it was like, this is what we listening to, and like having a celebrity push. People were like, all right, well, we're gonna listen to it. You know what I'm saying? Or, hey, I'm gonna be here at this time, and people show up. It was just insane to me. You know what I'm saying? So just understanding, and then I remember Fabulous created a few trending topics. He made trending topics popular. I don't think he created trending topics, but he made po it popular. And then officially Ice was on there. He made fake retweets popular. There's a lot of social media users that had came up and coined terms that they weren't compensated for. Cuffs the Legends had washed, Washed Chronicles, and he had a couple of things. He was very funny early on. So there were a lot of people that, did their thing, Nerd at the Cool Table. He had a dope blog going, and then like just down that line. But that created a tweet style. You know what I mean? And tweet style, just how people like, the people that were coming on later on to 2011, 2012 started to learn how to like use Twitter in a different way, almost in a like lunchroom kind of way, where you're like jokes, DMs, flirting, flyouts, like topics. You know what I'm saying? Like this Twitter doc just came out, the Black Twitter doc, but it took me back to so many different moments. Like on my pod, I had my man Snotty Dripping to Temecula. He, the guy that's Snotty Dripping, he was like explaining the story about how that went around, but like just learning how to use it. And as I would use it every time, I was a type of person, I didn't want too many people to know who I was. So I never posted my picture. I would have like an avatar of a black cafeteria tray. And anytime I got up to like 3,000 or 4,000 followers, I would delete my account. And then I start fresh when I wanted to get back on and I had shit to talk about. So by the time I got into podcasts and I started up this last account, I was a school teacher, so I had to like protect myself, my personal life. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't like I was saying anything like controversial, but like I just like the balance of like having that as my social life and my professional life separate. You know what I mean? Because parents would Google and be trying to find you and do all this other stuff and say, well, that's not how you're supposed to talk and that thing. You know what I mean? So I was really turned off by social media for a few years. Like by 2015, 2016, I wasn't on Twitter or anything else. And then I got back on. But to answer your question about NBA bubble life, my friend who was working at Slam got laid off. I was on summer break. The pandemic's going on. We're just all trying to figure out life. And, you know, the NBA season was shut down. And we all following like, yo, you know, like they going to the bubble. Like, what they doing? Like, I wonder what kind of content they're going to be posting. We're going to be following anyway. So we decided, you know, on our entire group chat, I suggested like, yo, we should just create this account. We came up with the name NBA Bubble. It was originally NBA Bubble 8. My buddy, I like kind of pushed him like, yo, go get NBA Bubble. NBA Bubble 8 sounds like off deck, like some username, random shit, right? So go get that. And then like the main guy we were doing it for, because I was suggesting, I'm like, yo, man, maybe this turns into something big and, you know, you can take the credit for it. He wasn't feeling it. So I was like, I'll start it up because I know social media. I understand the voice. I've been doing this thing for a while. Right, let's just play with it. So we end up aggregating, taking videos off Instagram and throwing them on Twitter, but like having funny captions to it. And man, that first night, man, I think we started the account at 10 p.m. I woke up in the morning, we had 2,000 followers. I said, that's kind of fast. So then I like kind of did some like, man, on my own personal account, man, my new favorite account is NBA Bubble Life. Then I had other people just like retweeting it, just like, yo. Not saying nothing, not saying it's mine.
Right.
Just anonymous. We got the Rich Paul pick. We threw the Mickey Mouse hat on it. Called it a day. Nobody knows who it is. Four different people. So I started signing jobs. You take videos at this time of hour while somebody else is asleep. You get some videos at this time of hour. I'll write copy for this. I'll write copy for this. We'll post, you know, this and that. We'll tag the players to get them to engage. And then like by day four, man, we had, I think it was like 80,000 followers, bro. And like damn, all the publications was DMing like, hey, I remember TNT was the first one. Hey guys, we want to have y'all on. Not even hey guys. Hey, whoever's running this account, we would love to have y'all on TNT. We like, yo, we not doing no nothing. Like we ain't saying no voice, nothing. We just gonna text. So they was like, we just gonna do the, we did the shaded face, like the witness protection. I was like, yo, so like, how did y'all come out with this? We like raw talent, fam. Like trolling the world, just kind of messing around. So like then New York Times, LA Times, Forbes magazine. So I'm like, look, man, teams is about to start playing soon. We're gonna lose momentum. Let's just guarantee everybody an exclusive and pretend like they getting an exclusive. So when we did the exclusive, we like, yo, we're going to do these interviews on Tuesday. The only one we did on Monday was New York Times. That was a big one. So I'm like, I ain't going to name the journalist, but he leaked the story early. I was hot because we submitted a Photoshop picture of the Death Row vibe cover, and we put all our faces in the spots. And each spot that you can see, like I'm Suge Knight, and then my other homie, it's Tupac, and then other persons that in the placements of the roles, the yep. importance, the roles of importance. And it came out in Forbes. We in Forbes, Photoshop, trolling Forbes. Oh. You know what I'm saying? And it was such a beautiful thing. And I was like, all the questions, Drew's going to lead. And my man answered all the questions as he was the leader. And then I kind of piggybacked and we answered a couple of things. We did some publications. We was able to do some dope things about it. But then we got brand deals. We had a brand. We designed the championship bottles for the Los Angeles Lakers in 2020.
What?
In the bubble. Yeah. Which was partnered with Wyden. Wyden came after us. So that was one thing. And then we had a deal with Tissot, the watch.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that. You know what I mean? We did some posts for Tissot. We had to deal with Bathletics, which was like the official hygienics for the bubble. You know what I'm saying? So we had like three brand deals. Instead of keeping the money, we ended up donating it to the Women's Shelter, Homeless Shelter in Los Angeles, and the Black Nurses Association in Orlando, where the bubble was.
Yeah.
So donated all the money. Wyden Kennedy reached out, and myself and Drew got hired.
From
and that's
NBA
how I got
Bubble
into
Life?
From NBA Bubble Life. That's how I got an advertiser.
That's crazy, bro. Mm-hmm. That's incredible, man. I feel like...
I mean, all glory to God, though, man, because honestly, like, I don't do this good deed. I'm not in the position that I'm in.
Yeah.
I just happen to just look out for my brother, man. You know what I'm saying? So, man, we locked in for that. Like, and the dope thing that came from that is my brother created Cactus Plant Flea Market, a deal meal with McDonald's, won several awards with no advertising experience. Myself became Innovator of the Year at Ad Color with no advertising experience. You know what I'm saying? I won a Clio Award with McDonald's All-American. So, like, God is good. You know what I'm saying? Blessed to be in these situations. But you see, it just comes back tenfold when you help people.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I thought it's a perfect segue into the Wyden and Kennedy and the marketing, opportunity, man. So, first of all, before I kind of get into your specific role, right? I feel like most people, I'm say me too. I didn't even, I'm not hold you. I didn't even know what the job of a marketing agency was until like recently. Like, I didn't like, I'm like marketing. I know you guys have worked on, you mentioned like McDonald's, Nike campaigns, right? I always thought like, let's take Just Do It, right? I always thought that Nike had like a committee or a board that they sat down and like came up with, that's what I did with All Facts. It's like, all right, hey bro, what you want to call this? All right, bet, boom. Like you just brainstorm. I didn't know there was a whole like platform of people who come up with these.
Guess what? Me too.
Like,
me
I didn't
too.
Even
I didn't
know.
Know.
That.
I didn't know till 2020. How about that?
Man, like I was like, this is, I'm like, yo, marketing agency, what is it? What does a marketing agency do? You know what I mean? So for the people who might be in that boat, right? Can you just explain like what it is that Wyden & Kennedy does, right? And kind of how you guys work with corporations to like launch these campaigns and things like that. And you know, why these people like Wyden & Kennedy are necessary for a lot of these corporations?
Well, first of all, just to better explain it for the people that aren't in advertising. Wyden Kennedy is like playing for the Yankees. Wyden Kennedy is like playing for the Lakers. Wyden Kennedy is like playing for a story franchise. It is legendary. You know what I'm saying? Like before me, a lot of legends came through and worked through there. You know what I'm saying? That like got it out the mud early on. But yeah, man, Just Do It came from a inmate that was on death row.
What?
Yeah.
Gotta break that one down.
That was the reference. He was ready to die, and he was telling the electrician, I mean, you know, the executioner, to go ahead and just do it. Yeah, it's very dark, but yeah, they took that to Nike and they got that penciled up, and Nike bought it. Yeah,
jeez,
but it stuck.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. But yeah, man, like you know, Nike and Wyden have been, you know, they got the lights on early on in the 70s, and they was able to build that relationship. You know what I'm saying? But like over time, you've been able to see Spike Lee and Michael Jordan commercials, all the Nike commercials that you love. You know, the Nike remix with the squeaking sounds where they're dribbling. The N1, we call it the N1 killer. It killed N1. That commercial single-handedly killed N1. You know what I'm saying?
Jeez.
Yeah, that was the answer to N1. N1 was making too much noise. N1 was the annoying fly.
Yeah.
And you know, they had the culture. You can't buy brands, can't buy culture.
Yep.
They were signing actual street ballers. They were taking over. The NBA was in a bad spot because the Lakers were too good. They were three-peating. Yep. You know, like people weren't into it because the Lakers were dominating. They thought the Lakers was never going to lose. And for a split second, you know, you got the NBA players to jump in. You got Vince Carter to wear the N1 Tai Chi during the 2000 dunk contest. So they had the culture. They had guys like Hot Sauce that were cool. You know what I'm saying? Ayo, Skip to My Lou. Like, they had the swag. They had the urban community.
Yeah.
And that was something Nike was like, God damn it. Like, we can't compete. And some shout out to the copywriter. I don't know his name, but he came up with, you know, Nike Battlegrounds. and they was able to, you know, take over. They
Yeah.
embraced the street ball. They sponsored the street ball. They came and hit those park, you know what I mean? The parks and you know, when you look at social currency, Nike is gonna win most of the time. You get social currency when you're wearing Nike. That swoosh is, it got a lot of power, man, in it. And you know, those are the things. But yeah, man, Wyden has created some dope spots. The Old Spice Centurion. You know what I'm saying? Where, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, it goes on. All the ESPN joints. This is SportsCenter. You know what I mean? Like them joints, like the
Jeez.
man, Travis Scott McDonald's. I mean, you know, and now, you know, the team that I joined when I first got on was Wieden Kennedy Bodega. And Wieden Kennedy Bodega is social first. So you start seeing a lot of stuff of our ads showing up on social media and working with brands that way and activations and things, you know, like taking over. You know what I mean? Like Lil Yachty Close Friends and the DoorDash thing where, you know, every Super Bowl commercial, if you win the sweepstakes, you win everything. You can win anything that was shown in the commercials during the Super Bowl. Like those type of things. That's where they was pushing it. You know what I'm saying? And it's just so many, I work with so many dope, talented creatives. That is just such an experience. And you know, I was grateful to be working on a McDonald's All-American account. I was never in a McDonald's All-American, but just to be, you know, associated with such a prestigious thing, you know what I mean? Kicking off the marketing post-pandemic. They shut the game down for 2 years, and myself and my team was responsible for getting the game back to where it was. You know
Yeah.
what I mean? I take a lot of pride in that, man. And, you know, being able to work with young talents like Bronny James and Cooper Flagg and, you know, Derek Lively's representing, you know, his class in the NBA Finals this year. So, you know, spending time with those guys and man, it's been great.
That's amazing, man. And you mentioned, so I want to kind of take it back because you mentioned that you kind of got this job with no advertising experience. So talk to me about them first few months on the job, trying to adjust, trying to learn on the fly, right? You mentioned you didn't even know what the advertising industry was till 2020. So, like, what is that, those first early days working? Because imagine, right? The way you describe it is like you're playing for the Lakers, you're playing for the Yankees, right? You're playing for the Cowboys, right? So how do you walk into a situation like that? The biggest opportunity that there could be with no advertising experience. All right, well, here you go. You know, get to it. What were those days like for you?
Well, first of all, I was unaware of how big of a deal this was. You know, I'm like you. I'm like, it's just a job, bro. Like, cool. But people, the way people were like reacting, like, what? You working where? Because this is the agency that everybody wants to get to. If you start an agency, if you went to school for it, you probably not gonna get in off the first rip. You're gonna go build your portfolio up to get here. So the fact that I started here, you know, you're not gonna really appreciate it how you're supposed to appreciate it. You know what I mean? You don't even understand like the magnitude of even getting through these doors on your first swing. You know what I'm saying? Like my first swing is a home run. And now you're working with all these legends, like, you know what I'm saying? Like Stacey Wall. If for those that don't know who Stacey Wall created Lil Penny. You know what I'm saying? Like Stacey Wall had the original idea to have Martin Lawrence be Lil Penny. And Martin Lawrence was too busy shooting movies, so Chris Rock was like, I'll do it. You know what I'm saying? And Stacey Wall pitching Lil Penny to Nike, doing the voice and
That's crazy.
saying, you know what I'm saying? Like that's the job of a copywriter, bro. Like, you know, he gonna say da 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 da, stop the car fool. There go Tyra Banks and da, 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 you know what I mean? And playing it up in that way and saying little Penny would do this and Penny's gonna be gone. And he's, you know, Penny's mild mannered, but he's going to be the person to talk for Penny and give Penny more personality. Like Wyden created all those personalities for these NBA stars we grew up loving.
Hey.
Let's lean into Barkley versus Godzilla. Let's lean into the Admiral, you know. David Robinson wasn't that type of person at all, but we can create that character. We can create Mars Blackman. You know what I'm saying?
That's hectic.
So, you know, advertising is beautiful like that, but also I can't just shout us out though. You know, translation, Steve Stout and them. He had Iverson and Jadakiss with the, you know, the move. You know what I mean? Like that was important to their culture. You feel me? Like it ain't, you know, it's some black heavy hitters in advertising space. Now, a lot of people don't know, but shout outs to them, you know what I'm saying? That have touched this touched this platform. But I mean, I could shout out a lot of people, John Petty, JP, one of the founders of Bodega, you know what I'm saying? Chris Martin, who's a general manager of Bodega. Like a lot of people black in the space, you know what I mean, doing big things. My man Miles Brown, who pinned Not a Long Shot for Caitlin Clark, the spot that, you know what I mean, like the you seen the billboard. That was really ill. Like it's
Crazy.
mad
That was brilliant.
dope ass creatives, man, in this space that looks like us. You know what I mean? So, man, shout outs to them.
I love to hear that, man. What would you say has been your favorite project that you've been able to work on since being at Wyden?
A personal project, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, Wyden believing in me and my dream. Not even my dream, but just more so what I believed in, bringing the Compton Career Fair to Compton and educating my community about advertising and trying to like plant that seed, you know what I mean, as a give back and things of that nature. That's why I was able to win Innovator of the Year, you know what I mean? Because they invested in my city, donated money. I got a chance to do this with the mayor in collaboration. Maxine Waters pulled up, you know what I'm saying? I had all type of vendors come through and do headshots and job applications and shine a positive light in my neighborhood, you know what I'm saying? Because there's a lot of poverty, there's a lot of negativity that the city gets sometimes, and it's a lot of beauty and in the madness. So shout outs to Wyden, and I was able to contribute that way. But from a advertising marketing standpoint, probably, man, working on Coming to America too, and also J Balvin McDonald's was probably a fun one, you know what I'm saying? Because that was like early on, like I was trying to get my beak wet and just really try to fit in, man. You know what I mean? I was nervous. I had you told me to describe the first couple months, man. The first couple months, I remember we doing an all agency meeting on Zoom, and they was like, "Show us something, Bubble Boys." You know what I'm saying? Like, all right, y'all here now. So like, and we was like, "Damn, man." So myself and Drew, we both really had imposter syndrome for sure. That first year, I felt like I was drowning because I just, didn't have too much to lean on or too much to work off of. But like, I'm grateful for my early coworkers and colleagues that were generous enough to answer every question I had, and had the grace enough to like help instead of hate, because I could have been a failed experiment. And now we look at non-creatives and all the people that have been hired since I've been on. Like I'm technically like not an OG, but I'm a OG in my office. You feel me? Like the turnaround rate. I've been there 4 years now, and it's like, I've mentored so many people since then. I've, walked them and talked them off of the ledge and helped them, navigate through spaces, you know what I mean? So, I don't think I have it all figured out, man, but I'm just grateful to, be on the other side.
And I know you were able to obviously transition to a new role with the celebrity and influencer relations. And I want to kind of talk about how that opportunity came about, because I thought that's, I know you, when we talked a couple weeks ago off air, you're like, man, no, they literally like made that position for me. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, yo, like, and I feel like for me hearing that, it's like, dang, man, this is somebody who walked into this company and corporation with no experience, right? You talked about having an imposter syndrome, having to learn on the fly, ask questions, but you eventually got to the point where they thought so highly of you that they created this role and this new position for you. So now it's like, nah, we want you to be you and be great at what you're already doing. Number one, talk about, I guess, how that came about and just what that meant to you, man, that a company that is the Yankees, the Lakers, right, of the advertising market, marketing industry, thought that highly of you to like, nah, like, we want to pour into you even more, man, and give you this new role so that you can be you.
Man, I actually needed to hear that today, man, right now, just hear it out loud and have some gratitude, you know what I'm saying? Like, 'cause that it is what it is, you know what I'm saying? Like, at the end of the day, Chris Martin, who I mentioned, is our general manager, also a good friend of mine. He just was being honest with me. He was like, "Yo, you're killing it, but you just only working on this one account. Like, I think you would be dope for this." And I have a friend already working in talent, but she was flooded with work. You know what I'm saying? Adma Ortega, she's one of the best in the biz. She worked on Interrupted. She worked Complex. She was Gunna's PR. She was, we're doing PR with Currency and JD. Like, the list goes on. So she's real ill in her role, but she was managing all accounts in North America by herself. So they like, "Yo, you think you can work under Adma?" And it's kind, first of all, a man having a woman boss, sometimes everybody can't handle it. But that's my homie, first of all. So I ain't really thinking about it like that. And I don't got no problem with working. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not bigger than nobody. I don't think I know it all. So I think the idea, first of all, is jumping into a space that and being vulnerable again. Cause you don't know it. You don't know it. You gotta hit the reset again. You know what I mean? Like, copywriting, I just got there. I just got to the point where I'm like, I can write anything. You know what I'm saying? I just got to that point, and now I'm being introduced to a scenario. But how it even came about was, like, people on at the office follow me. They like, "Dang, bro, you be with everybody on Instagram, bro. Like, you be with like, I don't know how you be with everybody, bro." And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I got like a natural, like, people gravitate to me. You feel me? Like, some I might start off not even knowing. I might go to a party with you, and you be like, "I don't know, bruh." And then me and bruh become like super tight, and you be like, "Damn, man, like, I introduced you to him. Like, how you even cool with bruh like that?" And it's like, it's honestly a skill, you know what I mean, when you really think about it. So, like that's the thing. But when they presented it, like, "Yo, you want to be like celebrity influencer coordinator, and like Adma's the lead." I'm like, "For sure, whatever y'all need." Because I used to just be cold calling, like using my phone as a black book. Like, "Oh, y'all trying to get KD? Hold on, let me call him." And K be like, "All right, bro, yeah, I'll do it." And they like, "Ah, it's more to it, because you doing it like kind of like from scratch instead of like looping in the right people." Because like, his agent can come in and say, "Oh, you was supposed to pay this amount." You gotta have legal. You gotta get shit on paperwork. You gotta have email. You gotta have like a paper trail. Certain things that I didn't know in this position. You know what I mean? Because I know mad people. You can call me and be like, "Oh, I'm trying to get con all right, hold on. Yep, here go." I normally do the group chat shit and do it like that. Now I got a whole process of how I go. You know what I mean? Adma's taught me how to like have a tracker. You know what I mean? Hey, like the day in, it, to walk you through my day in life is like an interest email. I might go on your page. "Oh, your email there. I'm talking to management or you. Hey, would you have interest in working with such and such brand?" Say Nike. "Okay, yeah, I have it. Okay, da, da, da. Can you sign this NDA? Because we're about to tell you something that's not out yet, so we have to protect in that." "Oh, I don't sign NDAs." "Okay, all right, well, let's check with legal. We good?" "Okay." Bung. So we've verified, we have on paperwork that we share with something that you have to keep. You don't have to sign it, but we got the blessing that if you go and try to do anything that we just shared with you, we gonna sue you. You know what I mean? But also, now I'm gonna share what the axe is. Is it something of your interest that you may be interested in? Then we're gonna give an interest offer. So the interest offer might, based on how many followers you got, how many engagement you do, that's what we're gonna offer. You know what I'm saying? So the first start might be 15,000. Now the ask might be for one TikTok. You get 15 grand, but you might be like, "I get 50 grand." So now I gotta go back to the agency and say, "Well, they said they get 50 grand." Now we gotta go to the brand, whoever we're working with, and say, "Well, if y'all really want them, this is what they want." And the brand say, "Huddle, yeah, all right, we'll give it to them, but meet them, try to save some money and try to meet them here." So I'll be like, "Hey, bro, We can do 35. Now they can counter. Now they gonna give me 50, but I'm gonna say 35 first.
Right.
And we get into a situation where it's like, all right, well, I'll meet you at 40. He want 40. Okay, deal. That's it. You feel me? And that's my day. That's what I'm doing every day. You feel me? And like, but I'm also finding, I look at the brief, myself and Adma, and then we'll be like trying to like, we'll huddle and say, who's good for this? You know what I'm saying? Do they have any, because they do background checks and all that. Do they align with the brand guideline?
Yeah.
Are they going to have enough energy to do whatever it is? Are they like too cool? Is it, you know what I mean? Like, it got to match. And it makes us look good when we pick the right people for the thing,
right,
for the activation. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. What would you say is, if you're going to an event, right, on behalf of Wyden and Kennedy, right, what does that look like as far as work? I feel like people take work trips all the time, man. And when you say you're in celebrity and influencer relations and you want a work trip, it's like, what is bro really doing? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
What does that look like? When you're
I mean, so like, when was it? Say last week, last Thursday, I went to a Versace party, right? It was Versace Concepts. They did like a collaboration for a show.
Oh, I was in New York. I saw that. I saw that on Instagram.
Yeah. So I'm like, all right, I gotta go. I don't gotta go, but like, these are places that I have to show my face just in case. You never know who's gonna be there. This is the new people that I'm building this relationship with. So I don't have to cold call you and DM you and then look all crazy. I've met you.
Right.
I've met your management. I'm showing you who I am. Hey, if this didn't work out, maybe I'll consider you for another brief. You know what I'm saying? But we're building that relationship early on because I have relationships with the agencies too. I'm dealing with CAA. I'm dealing with WME. I'm dealing with whoever it may be. But like going out, you might be having a drink or two. You might be there for 2-3 hours. You might be there for an hour. My goal is to talk to at least three people. You know what I'm saying? I set that personal goal. Go in the room, you know, vibe with three people that might, you know, hey, you know, this and that. You got to kind of do the transactional. This is what I do. I'm on behalf of Wyden. I'm the celebrity influence relations. You know what I mean? Like, big fan of yours, blah, blah. We would love to work with you in the future. Take my number or take my Instagram. Let's talk. Let's get on a, you know, get something on the calendar and we'll meet up to show interest. Yeah. Or it might even be that. It'd be like, yo, whenever something comes up, I'll keep you in mind. I'll reach out. But building those contacts. And when you have those contacts, I can look at my phone or somebody hit me like, hey, man, I'm trying to work with Tracy Morgan. All right, yeah. Hold on. Let me, hey, Tracy, they trying to work with you. It's okay for me to pass your number? I bet. Boom. Now, you know what I mean? Like, you know, so it's not me just collecting followers or trying to look lit or post stuff. Cause I don't post nothing too. That's a whole nother thing. If I'm there, I'm probably posting cause the homie there or it's the homie event, but I'm not posting cause I'm working or saying like, look who I'm lit with. If somebody posting me, I really know that person. Like I'm really rocking with them. I'm not posting them just because like, I'm trying to like be lit on social. I'm trying to be the complete opposite because I work in this space. You know what I mean? Like, that's not my job to be lit. My job is to engage with these people. And, you know, there's a skill and talent because everybody got a person that they, like, are grouped out for.
Right.
I always say the people that I'm, like, could be fanatic about, they didn't go. It'd be Prince and Michael Jackson. You know what I'm saying? Tupac. You know what I'm saying? Where I'm like, everybody else is like, oh, what's up, bro? Or, and it's easy to gravitate because they're going to be on some stuff like, you know, like I'm treating them like a normal person.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I ain't, even though they do enjoy that part too. You know what I mean? I think they enjoy the power part, the dynamic of it. But like, that's not it. I'm here to work with you, bro. Like, if we can't get no money together, I ain't gonna bother you. I promise.
Do you feel like, because I feel like most people, for example, right? When I was at All-Star Weekend this last year, there's a bunch of people that's in the room. You know what I mean? From obviously players, agents, managers, celebrities, whatever, right? And you might want to approach them, but I might be in my mind thinking like, hey, I want to have you on my podcast, or hey, it would be dope to work with this brand, you know what I mean? But in my mind, I've always heard you don't necessarily want to approach somebody in the first conversation with like, hey, this is what I do, this is what you do, How can you help me? How can I help you? Whatever. I think obviously it's different if you're going to an event on behalf of work because you know you're there to work and to make those connections. But I feel like a lot of people will struggle with when you're meeting somebody for the first time. All right, do I just try to build that relationship and, you know, have a conversation, you know, be friendly and leave it at that? Or do I go in there like, damn, this might be the only time I see this person at this concert, at a Versace party. There go, you know, I don't know, Michael Rubin. Like, should I approach him and be like, hey, this is what I do? Because he probably gets those conversations all the time. You know what I mean? So what is your two cents on that? You think it's just difference if you're in there for work versus if you're kind of there to just maybe network and show face? Or how do you kind of navigate those situations?
I think it's a time and place. You know, if the conversation ain't really getting there, you know what I'm saying? Like, somebody asks, hey, what would you do? So, oh, man, I got a podcast, man, on such and such on the platform.
Right.
Oh, where can I check it out? You know what I mean? Or if the conversation stopped, take a hint. But, like, still build the conversation of, like, yo, man, like, I would love to, you know, stay in touch, get your Instagram. Instagram easy, man, because, like, a number so personal, and you're not going to call. People don't call nobody no more.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's just so invasive because, like, you're going to think, like, this person's going to be texting me, OD.
Right.
Versus a follow back is very, like, you can unfollow somebody and go on about your business.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like a follow is low lift. It's low currency. It's cool. It's like, all right, I'll actually rock with them. But, like, I think the approach of, like, trying to book a guest, like, especially for a podcast, is mainly just being cool. And right. If you was being cool that whole night, they going to rock with you in general. Like, you never know. You don't never know what you're going to be, you know what I'm saying, going into them situations. But don't come in with an intention of, like, asking for something.
Yeah.
Because, like, could you imagine somebody coming in trying to ask you for something off rip? Like, off jump. Like, asking you, like, yo, you're going to be like, damn, like, you don't even know me.
Damn, right.
Yeah, like, you don't even know me. Like, huh?
You're right.
Like, that's the first thing you're trying to do. Like, I get it that, you know what I mean? But, like, pretend at least.
Right.
You trying to, you know what I mean, get to know me type thing. So, yeah, you know.
Now, I know you got it's late on the East Coast, man. So, I've got a few more questions for you, and then we'll wrap it up. But I do want to ask you, like, me, myself, I feel like my people who, obviously, name of the podcast, What's in Your Bag podcast. And we try to talk about creativity and being a creative, man. I feel like, obviously, you've master that, you know, to the point where you've been able to build multiple brands, whether it's Count the Dings, NBA Bubble Life, right? You're in the advertising and marketing space now to where you're now working with influencers and celebrities and putting them on the campaign. So from the other side, right, from the creative side and working for a platform like Wyden, what do you think what do you think somebody can do to separate themselves, better position themselves to work with brands and to kind of tap into some of this? I think that this creator economy is only growing and becoming more and more prevalent. I think people are realizing that instead of throwing $50,000 for, you know, a commercial or $50,000 for a billboard on the side of the highway that people are not going to read, I can send that same $50,000 to a creator or to a celebrity that has a large following that people feel like they know and they can relate to that will translate a lot more to revenue. So if you're a creator and you're trying to tap into this market, right, what are some of the things that can help separate yourself, that can help build your profile so that some of these brands will want to work with you? Because obviously you're in a position where you're kind of glossing over, like, all right, who will fit this? Who will fit that, right? So you kind of have a perspective, you know, a great perspective with that. So what do you think are some things that would help?
I think most of the stuff that a lot of people follow, especially small accounts, right? They think that, like, this ratio is supposed to be like, oh, I'm supposed to have a ton of followers and I don't supposed to follow nobody. You should be following people because that shows that you actually rock with who follows with you. You know what I mean? Like, with your community. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you following 800 people, when you got a million followers, like, I'm going to be like, bro, you don't even really engage. You're not engaged with your community. You just collecting those people.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then also, like, commenting, man, being in the comments, actually being engaging, like, your engagement rate got to be high, man. Like, people got to know that you actually gonna talk back instead of, like, he ain't gonna talk back, but I'm gonna just be here. I'm gonna just say first, or I'm gonna, you know, drop a gift in here. Or I'm gonna do this. Like,
Right.
nah, engage, because the more you engage, it's gonna show that people have a chance to actually, you know, your post gonna get that, you know, because they know, like, oh, he actually be talking back.
Yeah.
And in certain situations, just like play it out as organic as possible. If you're a fan of their brand, show it, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think the worst thing that could possibly happen is people archiving, right? They do this whole rapper thing where they only got one post.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm the person looking at your account trying to tell a brand why you are suitable, but you got nothing for me to show. I have no evidence to show that, like, oh, you're a big fan of the brand, or that you did this, that, and the third. Like, there's no evidence because you are hiding your life. I'm never going to find out anything that you got going or be able to market you or shop you because you playing it too cool. You can't be too cool on social media if you actually looking to, like, work with brands, man.
Yeah.
That's not how this work.
Yeah.
I ain't never seen a private account get lit.
That's a nugget. That's a nugget right there, man. Can't be too cool. Can't be too mysterious, man. We talked a bit off air, man, just about, like, life. You know what I mean? And just the ups and downs, man. Like you mentioned, the inching closer to that next milestone and 40 and trying to figure out, like, what's next. And I feel like we talked about a little bit at the beginning of the podcast as far as, like, you know, you've been able to accomplish so much in that 30 to 40 range, man. Like, in getting this job at Wyden, getting the promotion, creating a new role and things like that. But I feel like at the same time, there are a lot of people who are putting that pressure on themselves to get that next job or figure out what it is that they're doing next in life. And I kind of wanted to give you opportunity to talk about, not even from, like, a professional standpoint or, you know, life, but just more so personally, like, how have you been able to approach this next chapter, man, and staying level-headed as far as, like, all right, man, you know, I have these accomplishments that I've been able to achieve up to this point, man, but, you know, what's next, right? How do I figure out what that next chapter is? Or do I want to stay at this role? Do I want to go? Like, you know, what do you look forward to, man? Because I feel like a lot of people are struggling with that, no matter how old you are. If you're 20, 30, 40, 50, right, you always have stages in life where things come up and you have to reassess, you know? So, what, you know, where are you at as far as that in your personal career, man, given the things that you've been able to accomplish at what still is a young age, you know what I mean? So much life ahead of you at the same time.
Yeah, man. I'm going to be completely honest, man. Like, optics-wise, it looks like I got it going on. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got it laid out. But, like, I'm constantly struggling with, like, what do I want to do next? I mean, because, like, this solely ain't my life. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I should be able to do all the things that I want to do. You know what I mean? And I think everybody should be able to do all the things they want to do and not be frowned upon. Like, you know, that's very old school way, just because the lack of resources, where somebody was like, oh man, my daddy had to stop living his dream because he had me. And then, like, he got aged out of his scenario. Like, you know what I mean? And it's like, nah, man, like, you want to be a background dancer, be a background dancer. If you want to do this, and, like, at this point right now, man, I'm just like, I stopped chasing the happy word, but, like, I'm just honestly just trying to find a purpose. You know what I'm saying? I think I, like, it's not all about the money. Obviously, we need money to survive, but, like, money's there. Because if you want more money, you can go get more money. That's the obvious. You know what I'm saying? If that's what you're going for. But, like, being able to be meaningful and do things that actually matter in this world, I think that's my next journey. You know what I mean? Like, as I go into this next level, I want to be able to start a family. You know, I've been back and forth on kids, but I think I want kids. And, you know, I've been giving myself to so many other people. I need to give back to myself and be a little bit more patient and still. I pray for stillness all the time just because I'm constantly on the go.
Yeah.
And just learning how to just relax my body. And I think that's my next journey, man, in the 40s, is just being okay with missing out on a lot of things and just being still, man. Stillness, that's it. Just, you know, appreciating what's around me because this world moved really fast. You
Yeah.
know what I mean? It moved really fast. Time moved really fast. You look up and it's gone. So I think stillness is like not trying to stop time, but age with time. Like, nice. Like fine wine, bro. Like for real. Like,
Yeah.
you know, I don't wanna be the cool guy forever. You know
Yeah.
what I mean? I'm actually looking forward to the fall off. Like, you know, no J. Cole, but I'm looking forward to it, man. The fall off is amazing, man. I ain't gonna lie. It's freedom. It's freedom because you're not worried about what people think. You're not worried about keeping up with the cool. You just still. And like, that's my next journey, bro. Just falling off. I ain't trying to be lit. I don't care about no followers, how many this and that. You know, like literally being still. Where I'm not checking my phone and I'm content with just, I don't know who that is now. You know
Yeah.
what I'm saying? Like, I know too much right now. I was joking with my group chat. I was like, they were talking about Method Man was like, yo, I'm not doing any more or Hot 97, Summer Jam, or whatever the joint was, because there's an age gap. And I was like, dang, man, we really the uncles now. Like, but also to a point of like, we still fighting a good fight at this moment, trying to learn the next artist instead of just tapping out and not knowing.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost a beauty in not knowing what's going on. We're overly stimulated and overly exposed to stuff.
Yeah.
Like, the average Joe shouldn't be arguing about Caitlin Clark right now.
Oh
The
man.
average Joe shouldn't be, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
Yeah.
we in too deep. We in too deep. We become the great debaters on social media. So it's like, I want to be to a point where I'm like, I don't even know who that is, bro. You know
Yeah.
what I'm saying? But obviously, I wouldn't be in the same role because I gotta be knowing whoever it is. So, you know, that next chapter or whatever it is, it's gonna be very out the loop.
Yeah, I love that, man. Speaking on Caitlin Clark real quick, man, I feel like I'm not gonna ask you your opinion on her or this whole narrative, the bullying thing, man. But I just feel like it's crazy how like you said, bro, every you turn on the TV, everybody's, oh, is she being bullied? Oh, is this whole Monica McNutt and Stephen A back and forth, people in the media beefing over it. I'm just like, yo, like, what is it that serious, bro? Like, I feel like the way the media is covering this is insane. And this doesn't necessarily have anything to do with me or you, but I just want to get your opinion on like the way the media is covering this right now, because I feel like it's almost like a race war sometimes. People trying to rally the troops and like, oh, is she, I don't know, man. It's crazy, man. Like this whole narrative that I'm just watching unfold, they're trying to loop Angel Reese into it. And oh, how do you feel? It's just like, bro, like the amount of commentary that I've seen on this in the last week has been ridiculous. I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on how this is playing out in real time.
Well, I'll say shouts to ESPN, shouts to all the outlets. They won. They got everybody in an uproar. Cause that, I mean, that's what it is. It's clickbait. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're watching the sport for who you're watching the sport for, you're going to notice that she's a very good basketball player. And you're gonna notice that the W is surrounded with tons of stars that are really good. You know what I mean? I'm on NBA Threads talking about, well, Threads. Talking about you know, Connecticut Sun being 9-0, Asia Wilson, you know, putting up crazy, you know, crazy performances. Arike, you know what I mean? Like the list goes on, you know what I mean? Like tapping Nafisa Collier, you know what I'm saying? Doing her stuff, you know what I mean? But these things are being played under because not only is it selling controversy, but it's just, you know, it's a talking point, you know what I'm saying? And like, it never was about Caitlin Clark. It never was about Angel Reese. This is about the fan and their true sentiment of how they feel about things. And that's being projected out and
Yeah.
overshadowing the sport of the WNBA. Like, in this amazing rookie class, Cameron Brink, Camila Cardoso, like, list goes long. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Jackson out there in sport, like, you know what I mean? Like, Pilly, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's some hoopers, some real bucket getters, you feel me? You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, like, Yeah, shit is over. It's over. It's over. So it's oversold. You know what I mean? Like Stephen A. Smith is a salesman. He is a Hall of Famer. He is a legend. No matter what people say, he's earned his right to do this as a black man in this space. He is a beat writer for 20 plus years. You don't have to like him. You don't have to do all the other stuff, but he earned his spot. Same thing with Skip Bayless. Them dudes are talented writers, legends in this space, and they've earned the place to be talking heads in order to get you outraged because it drives the ratings. It is a game. And every time you turn it on to complain, they won that day. You don't have to watch it. You do not have to watch it, but you do.
Hey,
same way you can complain about, you know, inside the NBA, like, oh man, they don't know what they're talking about. You still watch it. You
thanks.
still watch it. So it don't matter,
Viewership still
man.
coming in. That viewership still coming in. That ad revenue still coming in. Can you still tune in?
Good and bad, listen, good and bad engagement still matters. Still a win. Good or bad, still a win. As long as the people are talking.
Thanks, man. So, like I said, I want to get you out of here, man. Last question that I want to ask you is, what would you say? And this might, you might got to think about this a little one, but what would you say is the best advice you've ever been given?
I ain't got to think about it too much, man, but the best advice I've been given, man, is slow motion is better than no motion, man. You know, slow motion is better than no motion. You feel me? Like, you in so much of a rush to be grown, you so much rush to be making money, you're so much in a rush to like lose time. Some people, I can't wait till I get out of here. I can't wait till I graduate school. I can't wait to be, you know, we rush life, man, and life is so precious, and we're not here for a long time. We're here for a good time. So make it count, man, for real. Like, you know, there's so many different ways to look at these things, but just have some gratitude while you're here, because you can be gone tomorrow.
Yeah, I love that, man. Well, like I said, I know it's late on the East Coast, man. I just want to say, for me, it's on behalf of myself and the whole platform, just thank you for taking the time out to come on the podcast, man. Drop some gems. I appreciate the conversation. We could talk about this for hours, man. So I definitely appreciate you for taking time out of the day and coming on. And just like I said, I just want to say again, like from somebody who's, you know, just turned 28. Here's somebody who I definitely look to for this inspiration to kind of continue to, you know, walk this journey and walk this path as a creative, you know, somebody who was able to translate from that, you know, social media Twitter game into a real corporate job that's amazing. That I think that a lot of people would love to have, you know, when it's all said and done, man. So I just want to give you your flowers, man, let you know that you know, you have a lot of people who appreciate the work that you do. You do great work, man. Again, man, just thanks a lot for coming on. Taking time to come on the show today, man. Definitely means a lot.
My guy, thank you, man. Shout outs to What's in the Bag. Shout outs to All Facts Media. And I don't think this will be the last time I'll be on here, but you know,
Nah.
thank you for having me tonight.
Certainly not, man. We're definitely gonna run it back, man. But you know, I can't let you out the door without asking you, man, who should we have next on the What's in Your Bag podcast? And whoever you say, you gotta get in your assist bag, man, your Black Trey Street Ball. Hot sauce bag, give us an assist to help us get them on.
Man, for the What's in Your Bag pod. I know so many dope people, honestly. Man, who would I want to share this platform with, bruh? That's gonna really take it. Like, you know, I got some, you know, big time names be cool, bruh, but sometimes it'd be some people that's just really profound, bruh.
Thanks.
Man, I gotta think, man, cause like I want it to be just like done right. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to just throw a random name because I can go get you any name, but I want you to really like value the insight too. You know what I'm saying? And let me get back to it, but I'm gonna definitely get to you. I'm definitely get to you on the text and send you a couple options, cause like. You know, it's a little tough to be just saying on the fly and saying like, oh, get him. And it's like, wastes his time because bro just probably wanted to talk about himself. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's not what this platform for. So, yeah, so, let me put some real thought into it, man. And I got you.
No doubt. I appreciate it. Whenever you get him on the show, man, I make sure I give you your credit, man, and your prop for the assist. We'll do it like
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No doubt.
Man. All righty, guys. This has been another episode of the What's In Your Bag podcast presented by Bet Online. As always, remember to like, comment, subscribe, share, tell a friend. It goes a long, long way in getting this podcast out to everybody who needs to hear it. This is going to be my guy, Pull Up Tay, on the outro. Make sure you guys are streaming his music. Until next time, folks. Peace.
Suave. I've been in my bag for a while, I'm invincible. Story of a young boss, grinding shit get critical. Calling on my bros one time, cause you special. I had some hood dreams of right rounds for my mentor. Every target that I shoot is on point like a pencil. Different route, changed relationships, I'm so sorry. Came up from the trenches and I made it, I say hardly.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.